Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Brad Hayes, professor in residence here at WAMC, as well as associate professor of political science at Union College. You're a specialist in so many things, I don't know where to begin. But let's start on the end of the Supreme Court term. What have we learned about the court this semester?
I'm not sure if we've learned that much more, but in some ways it's concretized what we were thinking, particularly, I think, you. We've had some discussions where we've gone back and forth about, you know, how we should understand the Supreme Court currently. And you know, this year was a good year for conservatives of all stripes in terms of Supreme Court decisions. We had decisions that were good for social conservatives, particularly related to the First Amendment, the religion clauses, as well as free speech as it relates to abortion protesting. Wall Street conservatives, fiscal conservatives, had some victories in the case involving public unions that we can talk about in a little bit. Even libertarians seem to do pretty well this year with some limitations on policing authority, search and seizures pertaining to cell phones. So, it seems as if conservatives won quite a bit this past year, and across coalitions, because sometimes we'll talk about conservatives winning, but it's one faction within the conservative coalition. But this year, it seems like there was something for conservatives of all stripes.
And it was almost always 5-4, right?
Mostly 5-4. I mean, the cell phone search case that I just mentioned was actually 9-0. Mm-hmm. Some of those kind of more libertarian feeling cases, are such that they can capture the liberal coalition.
And what was the cell phone case again?
That was a case that the Supreme Court ruled that kind of a search incident to arrest, a warrantless search, could not include looking up and accessing the individual's cell phone. So in other words, there's so much information on your cell phone, not just of who you've called, but of your internet searches, the GPS information, where you've been, all this kind of thing, that the Supreme Court said the cell phones need to be treated differently. That they tell us, or tell the police rather, almost too much about us, and so that you must in fact have a search warrant, meaning that you're going to need probable cause and judicial oversight in order to access that information.
So the conservatives threw a bone to the liberals, if you think about it.
Yeah, in some ways. I mean, it is an interesting case in the sense that police do have the authority to search incident to arrest, in other words, without a warrant, things like letters, diaries, purses, handbags, etc. But they stopped at cell phones. And they just seemed to say that this was too much. And this kind of builds off of a case that they decided about 2 years ago, where the court said that the police cannot attach like a GPS tracking device to your car without a warrant, that also constitutes a search under the Fourth Amendment. This is kind of, an interesting place where the court seems as if it has some kind of a handle on new technologies related to the Fourth Amendment and attempting to create some kinds of restrictions on the Fourth Amendment. And it's interesting because it's not as if they will rule in all cases that the police are limited in Fourth Amendment powers. For example, they've ruled that the police have the right to search youths that run away when they see the police approaching. They said there's no cause, that in and of itself is enough to give cause to warrant stops, frisks, and searches. So it's not as if they're looking at the Fourth Amendment as a whole differently, but when it comes to technology, it seems as if they're kind of willing to place some constraints on policing authority.
Well, from a political science point of view, everything you say so articulately is right, but I have a different, more cynical view. And that is when, people search other people's handbags and things of that kind, that's different because it's unlikely that any of those 9 justices are going to have their handbags searched. On the other hand, everybody has a cell phone.
Yeah. I think there's something to that. Linda Greenhouse had a piece in the New York Times earlier on this year that made that argument at some length, and I thought it was rather convincing. And in fact, that shows up in the oral arguments on that case about the GPS tracking device. They said so. They said to the person making the argument for the federal government, so you could put a device on our cars and track us around, meaning the justices, for months at a time, and that would not constitute
without,
a search
without having a warrant.
Without having a warrant, and they said, and the federal government had to acknowledge that it did, and you know at that point they basically lost the case. So you're right. I mean, there is something that how will we be affected? We, the justices, be affected by this kind of a ruling in a way that involves technology and makes it very different from, say, you know, hanging out on a street corner in a section that draws a lot of police attention.
Gotcha. What else you got? What other interesting cases should we talk about?
Well, I mean, so one of the things that I mentioned is that, you know, it was a fairly good year for social conservatives. A really interesting development on the court in relating to the two religion clauses in the First Amendment. There's an the establishment clause that prohibits the government from establishing a religion and a free exercise clause that gives the people the right to exercise their beliefs freely. Now, historically, the Establishment Clause has been given much greater protection by the courts than the Free Exercise Clause.
And let's just go very quickly into a one-line description of the Establishment Clause.
Sure.
What does it mean?
Establishment Clause means that the government can't sponsor a religion, meaning that you can't promote one religion over the other, and in a more kind of extreme form, that you can't privilege religion over irreligion.
Okay. So a lot of people came to the United States, early settlers and others, and they came because they were Puritans or because of this or that, and that's why that's there. Okay.
Right, yeah.
And so now this free exercise clause.
And free exercise is designed to, in fact, enable you to follow your beliefs, your conscience, in a way that is largely free from governmental interference.
Okay, now, so if we get a healthcare law that says, you got to give abortions if you're going to have the money, and people say, wait a second now, I don't believe in abortions.
Right, and so that would, in theory anyway, it carves out some space. Now, the Supreme Court has basically said when it comes to free exercise cases that otherwise neutral laws, in other words, laws that apply equally to the town atheist as it does to the devout in the town, are constitutional. Right, that really what we're talking about in free exercise cases are those that are targeting someone for their beliefs and for their religious practices. But so neutral laws are generally considered constitutional, at least under the court's kind of old jurisprudence. But we have two cases in which what we've seen is that the this past term that the Supreme Court has in some ways flip-flopped the protection. There's a case coming out of Greece, New York, in which the town board had a practice of beginning each session with a Christian prayer. The Supreme Court in the past has basically said those kinds of public prayers are unconstitutional. They upheld this. And Justice Kennedy argued that there's essentially no coercion or intimidation involved in that kind of a prayer, and that as such, it's perfectly constitutional. On the flip side, the Hobby Lobby case, which was actually not a free exercise case, but it had a free exercise flavor. It involved a statute that Congress passed and called the Religious Freedom Restoration Act back in the early 90s. And of course, it held that closely held corporations can claim religious exemptions to federal mandates, such as providing contraceptive coverage for employees. But this is the first time the court has ever granted a religious exemption to a for-profit corporation. So in thinking about kind of some things that we might see soon is an attempt to expand that ruling. And there's a really interesting case that the court will hear next term. There's an appeal by a Muslim prisoner in an Arizona supermax prison, and he wants to grow a beard as a reflection of his beliefs, but the prison currently restricts that. In the past, the court has basically given pretty broad discretion to prisons to run things, even if it in fact encroaches upon beliefs. But we might in fact see an expansion of this kind of effort of creating more space for free exercise. And the same kind of team, legal team, that was backing up Hobby Lobby has now signed on for this appeal by the Muslim prisoner.
Brad Hayes, always wonderful to have you here. Brad Hayes, Associate Professor of Political Science at Union College and one of the brightest young men I know. Thank you so much, Brad.
Great to be on.